provisional session from the presbytery. So, he is the pastor, and he was the church planter at Spring Run Presbyterian Church, which is in Chesterfield County. And so, they're no longer a church plant, and we are thankful that Andrew has time to invest in continuing to see churches planted throughout Metro Richmond, including Northside. And so, I've asked we asked Kevin to preach on prayer, and this week I asked Andrew to preach on mission. And so his topic was given to him, and we are excited to hear. And I think it's important because as we start this new year, last week we're always going to do a sermon on prayer to start the new year, and this year we want to followed it up with another topic of that goes right there with prayer, especially in a church plant, which is mission. Why are we here? What are we doing? What are we about? And so, Andrew, come on up. We're thankful that you're here, and ask you to bring God's words to us.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It is. It's encouraging to come, first of all. And Kevin Green last week talking about prayer is important because the pastors in the Richmond area have been praying for a long time for many churches to be started and planted and to thrive and to grow. And so every one of you sitting here is an answer to those prayers from years of praying. And so it's really good just to see the fruit of that. And so, and like Matt said, prayer is always something important, fundamental, basic to what we do. Because without it, we don't go anywhere. Without it, we have no mission because we have no backup to call in. And so in prayer, we're calling in help from God on our mission. It is kind of odd that I'm talking about mission, or at least your mission, because your pastors are more qualified to talk about your mission than I am. And but we are going to look at mission here. And so as we do that and come to this text this morning that I want us to read, I really want us to look at it and just see what it's like for some of the disciples to be on mission with Jesus and what it was like for them to follow him in this encounter that we have here in Mark chapter 5. So you can follow along with me as I read the words to this text. They came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains. But he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. And crying with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he was saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. And they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." So he gave them permission. And the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs. The herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs, and they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. The grass withers, the flowers fade, but the word of our God will stand forever. Praise be to God. Demons, really? I mean, here we get this passage. I'm the guest preacher coming in from the other side of the river, and I'm starting with demons. You're like, oh, really? Seriously? Come on. What are we to think about that? Many of you have friends who are very rational in the way that they think and not very spiritual and maybe very overtly unspiritual. And the whole idea of demons in this other world would be something that well, it's just kind of silly to believe in, really. Maybe some of you sitting here thinking that, kind of skeptical and a little curious to find out a little bit more about what this church is about. So what do we say? What do we think about demons and things like that? Let me tell you two stories about evil from my personal experience. I was, a number of years ago, serving in a homeless shelter for addicts in the city of Philadelphia. And one morning, I was walking down the sidewalk, and this was very early in the morning, probably 6:30, walking and praying. And a man was walking toward me. Found out later his name's Bill. He was walking toward me, and he was very large, very tall, very overbearing in his presence. And as I got closer to him, I stuck out my hand to give him a Pop-Tart and ask if he needed help with anything. And when he looked up, I saw that his face was melted like wax. He had no eyelids, no nose. His skin just drooped. His lips barely formed. And over a couple of days, I got to know Bill a little bit. In one particular instance, I asked him a question. I said, Bill, what do you think is going to happen to you when you die? He was eating an ice cream cone at the time. He took a lick and he licked up at me and he said, I don't die. I've died twice and lived both times. And later, somebody told me one of the accounts in which he died and why his face is the way it is. He was strung out on heroin on the sidewalk. Some boys came to him, covered him in gasoline, lit him on fire. It was evil action of those boys that they did to do that. Horrible, terrible. Another instance. When I was in high school, I went on for a couple of weeks. I went to the Dominican Republic to serve on a medical mission, also working with the church there and doing some other things, but this particular part of it was medical. I wasn't medically trained. I was just helping, like weighing people, taking measurements, handing them off to the doctor. And there was a time where this mother came in with her young boy, and he was malnourished, as most of the people were. She carried him into the clinic, and he was wearing a necklace that was a voodoo necklace, is what she told us. And so the pastor who was there and the doctor talked to her and said, well, why do you have him wear this voodoo necklace? And she said, well, it protects him from the evil spirits and it keeps him healthy and free from sickness. She's standing in a medical clinic and he's ill. And so the doctor said, we would like to cut this off and treat him. And the pastor did the same thing, saying, we trust in Jesus, that he is the one who cares for us, that he is the one who is our ultimate healer, not in other spirits. And so they asked for permission to cut off the necklace, and she granted the permission, and they did. And the second they cut the necklace off, the boy immediately had a seizure, which lasted for minutes. And the pastor took the necklace, opened the pouch, burned the contents, and prayed, and the seizure stopped. I think the Bible gives us reason, and my experience at least gives me reason, to believe that there is a very real spiritual world that we deal with, and evil that does exist in ways. There is a spiritual evil that is both outside of us, out there, and there is also a kind of evil in a way, really it is, that's in us. And sometimes that's the one that's harder to deal with. It's harder to admit that I've got this problem, that it's me. And yet Jesus talks to us and tells us that we need to deal with this evil, these problems of evil. And Jesus is the one who comes to bring healing. He tells us in Luke's gospel, he says, he comes for the sick because the healthy don't need the doctor, the sick do. I'm here for the sick is what he says. And so he comes for the sick. And Jesus begins to, in his ministry, he begins to restore things, all things to make them right, which he will one day complete. But he begins even with healing, healing us socially, healing us spiritually, healing us psychologically. And so I really want us to pick kind of three things that I see in this text, thinking about mission. Three things, three lessons to learn about being on mission with Jesus. And here's the first one. I think the mission with being on Jesus is cross-cultural. Okay? Being on mission with Jesus means being cross-cultural. And what I mean by that, and it said very simply, is this. There is no place Jesus won't go. There is no place he won't go. Look at verse 1. I mean, verse 1 tells us they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. Okay, what you don't know from history and everything, that's the other side of the lake. It's where the good Jewish boys were not supposed to go. And they're going over there, and Jesus says, we're going there. It's like, I own the whole world. There's no place I won't go. And so he's intentionally going to a place that is different, a place that he knows that they need to go. And so he crosses the sea with them. Notably, where does he land, right? They cross the sea, they land on the other side, they get out. They land on a pig farm, okay, right? I mean, put your Jewish hat on for a second. If you're going to be kosher, what is one animal you are not supposed to be around? Pigs, unclean, right? And yet he lands them on a pig farm, okay? Jesus is saying, look, it's okay. There's no place I won't go. We are going to do things that are different. And so he breaks cultural and religious customs by going to an unclean place and speaking to people who are different. In this case, this person as a social outcast, living on his own, away from the rest of community. And so he's taking his disciples on mission with him to teach them that God's grace is for all people everywhere in all places. Right? That's good news. And I don't need to tell you that. The beauty of Northside is that you are so diverse, you walk across the street and you have diversity. You don't have to cross a lake. That's a beautiful thing about Northside, the way that God has woven it together here. And so the beauty of that is that you guys learn and appreciate differences of people like you and not like you, right here where you live. One of your core values, because I read it on your website, you should check it out, it's pretty good. two of your core values actually are receiving grace and extending grace. Right? So part of your mission means we need to receive grace and know what that is from Jesus, but then in getting it and knowing that mercy, we got to give it to others. And you do that where you live, where you work, where you play. You're in the north side, for the north side here. And so that's a great thing. I think, though, the bigger distance than maybe going across the street, that's human. I don't know about you, because who am I? I'm coming from the other side of the river, right? But I'll talk about just people and human nature. The bigger distance than crossing the street is the distance in your own heart. Like, can I do this? Do I want to do this? Will I make the effort to go be nice to my neighbor who leaves their crap on my lawn? Or whatever it is. And will I reach out? Will I be nice to people? Will I be kind? And that sometimes is the harder one to do, is to bridge that gap in your own heart to love people. Maybe a practical way to think about it for you, and again, I don't know, but here we are gathered, and we're going to take and eat the Lord's Supper together, which is a wonderful thing. And it's one thing to do that on Sunday when we come together to worship. But what about during the week? Will you eat together during the week? Will you be part of your small group structure, your community groups, your Northside groups? Will you do that with people in different places? Will you follow Jesus to do those kinds of things and say, we're going to invest in the north side for the north side and be the hands and feet of Jesus here? So Jesus is leading his disciples on this mission. They land a boat. They get out. They're walking through the field of pig poop, dodging it probably because they're good Jewish boys, right? And they're like trying not to step in any pig poop and everything. And following Jesus, they're like, oh no, oh no. And then this guy just comes running at them like, bah! screaming. I mean, really, it says he comes running at them screaming is what it says. So I don't know if he screams like me, but he screams. And he's running at them screaming, and they're standing in pig poop, looking at the boat and looking at the guy and going, Jesus, we should go to the boat. And Jesus is like, we're going that way. And so they're following him there. And the second lesson that they're learning is that being on mission with Jesus is supernatural. To put it simply, there is no power he cannot overcome. They're scared. They're going, what in the world are we doing here? And he's like, it's okay. It's okay. We're here. So Jesus encounters different powers. And here very in supernatural ways. And yes, with demons. And we'll talk more about that in just one second, briefly. But I don't want you to think that I'm all like, man, this crazy Chesterfield preacher is this demon dude and stuff. Understand the context of what's happening in this passage and what Mark is trying to get the reader, you and I, to see. In Mark chapter 4, at the end of it, you know what happens? You know why they're on the, you know, they're going across the lake to the other side. But while they're on the lake, you know what happens? A storm comes up. A storm comes up and the disciples are like, we're going to die. We're going to drown here. And they're bailing and stuff. And Jesus stands up and tells the wind and the waves. He says, peace be still. And it stops. And they say, who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him? Jesus is demonstrating supernatural power over nature itself, that even nature obeys him. And then if we were to go after this text that we just read to the end of chapter 5, Jesus runs into a local synagogue ruler named Jairus, whose daughter has died, and he raises her back to life. He again shows supernatural power over life itself, over death, to bring life again. So recognize what I'm saying in that the mission is supernatural. It is that you have with you the very power of God by the power of his Spirit, that Jesus is with you in the presence of his Spirit supernaturally for you to be on the mission that you're doing. And we see it here because Jesus overcomes power over nature, power over death, and power over demons. And the demons here come to this guy, come to Jesus, and we see it especially in verse 8. I'm going to look at it in the Bible I brought because I'm more familiar with it, but he says this. It says, for Jesus had said to him, come out of this man, you impure spirit. Jesus is performing an exorcism right in front of the disciples. And in verse 7, what we see is that this guy comes and shouts at the top of his voice, and I didn't quite go to the top of my voice, but you know, I didn't want to scare everybody. What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? And then you know what he says? Don't torture me. I find this fascinating. Jesus sets foot on this soil, and the first thing that happens is the demons come report to him. Okay, we know you're here now. Please don't torture us. And that's really what they say. Do you see what they're acknowledging? Do you see the way in which we doubt in our own lives? Right? Like, God, do you really got the power? I mean, can you really help me in this situation? Look, the demons know we can. And yet we doubt it at times. And we don't want to believe. And what we need to know is that the demons know that Jesus has the power. They know that one day they are going to face judgment. And here Jesus sends them away from this man. They go into the pigs, they run into the sea. Now, what is Jesus doing there? He's doing something symbolic, I think, in what he's doing. I mean, he's doing something very personal that we'll see in just a moment, but he's also doing something symbolic. By sending these demons into the pig and making them leave the land, he is helping cleanse the community, the area, the land. But the pigs run into what? The sea. And they drown in the sea. And in the Jewish mind, in the Jewish way of thinking, the bottom of the sea is the gateway to the underworld. Jesus is sending a message to his disciples saying, they came and reported to me, and this is their destiny. It will be that they go to the underworld. I think I'm still good. So he's saying that symbolically they're going to the underworld in that way, through the bottom of the sea. Now, here's the thing where you and I have to deal with real life, though, right? Okay, that's great. That was like a long time ago. That was in this other place. But if Jesus has the power, then why doesn't he end the problems of the world now? I mean, look, we've got evil, we've got injustice, we've got racism rampant across our country and clashes with police and all kinds of things going on. Why can't he just fix that now? I don't know all the answers to that. I don't know why Jesus isn't going to fix it all right now and why all his reasons are for not doing that. I do think we can say there is a combination of factors as to what is happening in life and all the problems that we face, the suffering and racism and everything. A combination maybe of some demonic influence in an outside kind of weird way, okay, because that happens. But for the most part, I really don't think that's what it is. I mean, I'm not ruling that out. I'm not saying that couldn't be involved in it. But for the most part, I don't really think that's what it is. I really think what we see in that is just the evil in the sense from others. When we face injustice in some way, when somebody wrongs us in some way, what are they doing? Are we saying, you're a demon doing that? No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's wrong when injustice occurs. And it hurts. And it hurts people, and it hurts families, and it hurts communities. And so it is wrong. It is an evil we face in that way. But the question is this, though, but why doesn't God do anything about it? Why doesn't Jesus just do something about it then? I think he does. I think he does. And I think one of the reasons that it continues is because he wants his church to be involved, to make a difference in places where evil and injustice happens, and to stand for what is right, to stand for what is true, to stand for what is beautiful, to stand for reconciliation in relationships, to stand for community of people, loving people as human beings together in a place. That's at least part of what the mission of his church is. To make peace just like his son came and made peace for us. It's what the church is supposed to be about. So I don't have all the answers as to why it happens, but I know that you and I are to be part of the solution. That we are to love people in different ways. That the church ought to be different in that way. And so we need to be part of God's plan to fight against the problems of evil. And you guys have ways to do that in your church. I mean, with your Northside engagement teams and other things, you guys have ways that you're serving, that you're loving, and you're showing, look, the church is a good thing for the community. And the biggest supernatural weapon you have is last week's sermon. It's prayer, right? You're praying, which is a supernatural act, talking to God, thinking, okay, God, hear me, and do something about this. Okay, that's your weapon. I think a lot of times we think the church is here for me. And I don't mean me as not you, but just me, you know? It's the church of me. It's the church of what I want. It's the church of consumerism. Give me something I need and what I want. And I heard one pastor say that we think the church is here for us and we forget that we are the church and that we are here for the world. That Jesus has given us the mission to be the church for the world to make a difference. And so the last lesson I want us to think about today then about this mission is that Jesus' mission is transformational. Okay, it was cross-cultural, it's supernatural, but it's also transformational. And what I mean by that in very simple terms is this, that there is no person Jesus cannot change, including you. Jesus does two personally powerful things for this man in this text in Mark 5 here. The first thing is he transforms him by showing him mercy in the midst of his suffering. Look at verse 15. This is the townspeople. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed, and in his right mind. Jesus shows him mercy in the midst of his suffering by casting out the demons and bringing healing to him. Notice the mercy that he gets. I mean, this man had a lot of problems. You think you've got problems? I mean, let's just consider four problems this man had. First, he's naked. Okay? He doesn't wear clothes, doesn't like them, just runs around naked all the time. Second, he's got chains hanging off of him that once bound him, but he found a way to break. But he keeps the chains on him and runs around. Third, he likes to hang out in graveyards. And fourth, he's demon-possessed. Okay? He had to be thinking, oh my gosh, my life is horrible. It's terrible. And then he encounters Jesus. And Jesus comes to him in his goodness and in his mercy to bring healing to him. I mean, the other rabbis of the day would have never gone near the guy. He would have fit their definition of insanity. Today, we would just put him in a psychiatric hospital. Okay? And yet, Jesus goes to the person. He doesn't go back to the boat. And he goes to love him. He shows mercy to him. And the thing I think about this guy is, even though he's demon-possessed, and you and I are not demon-possessed, I don't think. Most of us aren't. I don't think anybody is here. So what does it mean for us? I mean, how do we compare ourselves to that guy? In some ways, this guy is a picture of the American dream. I mean, he is free, completely free to do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, and nobody is going to tell him anything otherwise. They tried to stop him and said, ha, I just break the chains. You can't stop me. He gets to wear what he wants. Well, he didn't wear anything. He just doesn't wear anything. So he does whatever he wants. He does. It's all about him. He can do whatever he wants. He's free. But he's not really free, right? I mean, that freedom that we so want and cling to for our own selves really in so many ways is a myth, isn't it? I mean, are any of us really truly free? Aren't we all enslaved to something? I mean, he's enslaved. He's possessed by demons. Maybe we're not possessed by demons, but aren't we enslaved by things and possessed by things that we look for significance and so on? I mean, whatever you think will give you security or status or pleasure or power over people is something that is enslaving to you. It is something that in some way you are worshiping. You serve it, you love it, you give allegiance to it because you think it will satisfy. It will make you safe. It will give you security. It will deliver you. It will give you power. Whatever that thing is, I mean, it could be pornography, it can be adultery, it can be achievement without ethics and concern for other people. It could be success at any cost. It could be greed. It can be drugs that give you status or numb your pain. It could be friends that make you popular but are bad influences on you. Whatever the thing is that you serve or that you want or you love, that you give your time to, is in a way a thing you worship because you think you need it so desperately. And what Jesus is saying is, we're all enslaved in some way. And he's coming to bring us freedom, to give us new life. And so he does transform this guy. He transforms him by obviously giving, by showing him mercy and giving him his health. But he transforms him because he also gives him a mission. I mean, look at what he does in verses 18 to 20 here. It says, as Jesus was getting into the boat, right, he's getting ready to go home. The man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him, and Jesus didn't let him. It's like, Jesus, check it out. I'm going to follow you. I'm going to be your disciple. We're going from 12 to 13. Let's go. And Jesus says, I don't think so. It's like, what? It's like, you're staying here because you have a mission. And your mission is in the place in which you live here, in this Decapolis, which means the 10 cities, this region. You're to go tell people how I've had mercy on you. Jesus leaves, but leaves a missionary behind. Go to your own people, he says, and tell them how much the Lord has done and how he has had mercy. You may think you cannot be a witness in your community. I don't know if you think that or not. Maybe you just think, that's the job of the preacher. That's why you're here. You come talk about it. And you think, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. I'm not a preacher. Good. It's okay. Don't be. Don't try to be. It might be better that you're not. Maybe people will hear you differently. Maybe they'll listen to you in ways they won't listen to me. That's a good thing. That's the way the church is supposed to work. I mean, it's the way Jesus' disciples were. Right? I mean, in Acts chapter 4, there's this great scene where all the religious leaders of the day are really mad at Jesus' disciples because they're going around saying things and healing people and doing stuff, and like things are changing for them in the religious community. And they're like, I don't know what to do with this. And so they're like, who are these people? And Acts 4:13 says, it's noted that the Pharisees said they were unschooled, ordinary men who had been with Jesus. What were their qualifications? I know Jesus. That's my qualification. Let me tell you what he did for me. That's your qualification. You know what Jesus has done for you and how he has changed you. So do you believe God can use you? Or are you like the townspeople here, who I would think would be really happy that a guy is not screaming in the graveyards in the middle of the night while they're trying to sleep? But apparently they're not, because what does it tell us? It tells us they're afraid and they go to Jesus. When the guy is dressed now and not naked, when he's sitting and not running around and screaming, and when he is in his right mind and sane, their response is, Jesus, this is too freaky. Can you leave? Get back in your boat and go. How do you react? Are you kind of like the townspeople, like, I don't know Jesus, just get back in the boat and go? Or are you like the guy who comes to Jesus and says, I found life, I found hope, I found healing, I found peace? I want to read to you something that I hadn't planned on reading, but I'm reading it for you and for me. I'm just jealous. I read it in my sermon this morning at our church. And we didn't celebrate communion today, and because we are here, I think it's fitting because we celebrate communion. And I think it's important that we think about this. As I just challenge you, I want you to be on mission as a church, cross-culturally, supernaturally, and transformationally, okay? In all those ways, I think that's at least part of what the church is supposed to do. But as you do that, I need you to understand, I'm not just telling you, come on, rah, rah, cheer, let's go team, go harder, go faster, you can do it. I need you to understand why you can do it. I need to make sure you know where you get the power to do it. That it's in Jesus. And what he told the guy was, tell them how you have been shown mercy. So what I want to read to you is the account of a medical doctor describing the crucifixion of Jesus. Crucifixion in general, but what Jesus went through. So bear with me as I read this. It says, the cross is placed on the ground and the exhausted man is quickly thrown backwards with his shoulders against the wood. The legionnaire feels for the depression at the front of the wrist. He drives a heavy square wrought iron nail through the wrist and deep into the wound. Quickly, he moves to the other side and repeats the action, being careful not to pull the arms too tightly, but to allow some flex and movement. The wrists are therefore then nailed to the wood and the cross is lifted into place. The left foot is pressed backwards against the right foot, and with both feet extended, toes down, a nail is driven through the arch of each, leaving the knees flexed. The victim is now crucified. As he slowly sags down with more weight on the nails in his wrists, excruciating fiery pain shoots along the fingers and up the arms to explode in his brain. The nails in the wrists are applying pressure to the median nerves. As he pushes himself upward to avoid this stretching torment, he places the full weight of his body on the nail through his feet. Again, he feels the searing agony of the nail tearing through the nerves between the bones of his feet. As the arms fatigue, cramps sweep through the muscles, knotting them in deep, relentless, throbbing pain. With these cramps comes the inability to push himself upward to breathe. Air can be drawn into the lungs, but not exhaled. He fights to raise himself in order to get even one small breath. Finally, carbon dioxide builds up in the lungs and in the bloodstream, and cramps partially subside. Spasmodically, he is able to push himself upward to exhale and bring in life-giving oxygen. Hours of this limitless pain, cycles of twisting, joint-rending cramps, intermittent partial asphyxiation, searing pain as tissue is torn from his lacerated back as he moves up and down against the rough timber. Then another agony begins. A deep, crushing pain deep in the chest as the pericardium slowly fills with serum and begins to compress the heart. It is now almost over. The loss of tissue fluids has reached a critical level. The compressed heart is struggling to pump heavy, thick, sluggish blood into the tissues. The tortured lungs are making a frantic effort to gasp in small gulps of air. He can feel the chill of death creeping through his tissues. Finally, he can allow his body to die. And all this is what the scriptures record, and they crucified him. And the reason you need to know it is because it shows you the wonderful, beautiful, sacrificial love of Jesus to have mercy for you, to suffer what you should have suffered before God, so that you are guilt-free, to be naked on a cross, so that you can be clothed and covered by the blood of Jesus, so that you don't have to carry shame the same way because you know that God loves you. This is the mercy you have. This is the mercy you need to show and give. Will Northside be known for it? Will you continue doing it? I know you will. Pray with me. Jesus, I do pray that you would make these things true in our hearts. Holy Spirit, I pray that you would do the work of illumination, that we would understand these words in this text, to know what it is to follow you on mission, to know what it is to be shown mercy, and empower us then to give mercy, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen. Take a moment of silence. Just continue in prayer and thoughts as we prepare for communion.